I walked back to the warehouse cubicle and shut the computer down, retraced my steps to the entrance hallway, and turned all the lights off as I went, and left everything neat and tidy. I tested Dahl's keys in the front door, and found the one that fit, and clamped it in my palm, turned back to the alarm box. Dahl was clearly trusted to lock up, which meant he knew how to set the alarm. I was sure Duke would do it himself from time to time, and Beck, obviously. Probably one or two of the clerks as well. A whole bunch of people. One of them would have a lousy memory. I looked at the notice board next to the box, flipped through the memos where they were pinned three deep, found a four-figure code written on the bottom of a two-year-old note from the city about new parking regulations. I entered it on the keypad. The red light started flashing, and the box started beeping. I smiled. It never fails. Computer passwords, unlisted numbers, alarm codes, someone always writes them down. I went out the front door and closed it behind me. The beeping stopped. I locked it and walked around the corner and slid into Dahl's Lincoln, started it up and drove it away. I left it in a downtown parking garage. It could have been the same one that Susan Duffy had photographed. I wiped everything I had touched and locked it up and put the keys in my pocket. I thought about setting it on fire. It had gas in the tank, and I still had two dry kitchen matches. Burning cars is fun, and it would increase the pressure on Beck. But in the end, I just walked away. It was probably the right decision. It would take most of a day for anybody to grow aware of it parked there, most of another day for them to decide to do something about it, then another day for the cops to respond. They would trace the plate and come up against one of Beck's shell corporations. So they were towed away, pending further inquiry. They would bust open the trunk, for sure, worried about terrorist bombs, or because of the smell. But by then a whole bunch of other deadlines would have been reached, and I would be long gone. I walked back to the Taurus and drove it to within a mile of the house, returned Duffy's compliment by U-turning and leaving it facing the right way for her. Then I went through my previous routine in reverse. I stripped on the gritty beach and packed the garbage bag, waded into the sea. I wasn't keen to do it. It was just as cold. But the tide had turned. It was going my way. Even the ocean was cooperating. I swam the same 12 minutes, looped right around the end of the wall and came ashore behind the garage block. I was shaking with cold and my teeth were chattering again, but I felt good. I dried myself as well as I could on the damp linen rag, and dressed fast before I froze. Left the Glock and the spare magazines and Dahl's set of keys hidden with the PSM and the chisel and the bradawl. Folded the bag and the towel and wedged them under a rock a yard away. Then I hid it for my drain pipe. I was still shivering. The climb was easier going up than coming down. I walked my hands up the pipe and my feet up the wall. Got level with my window and grabbed the sill with my left hand. Jumped my feet across to the stone ledge, brought my right hand over and pushed the window up, hold myself inside as quietly as I could. The room was icy. The window had been open for hours. I closed it tight and stripped again. My clothes were damp. I laid them out on the radiator and headed for the bathroom, took a long, hot shower. Then I locked myself in there with my shoes. It was exactly 6 in the morning. They would be picking up the Taurus. Probably Elliot and the old guy would be doing it. Probably Duffy would have stayed back at base. I took the email device out and sent, "Duffy?" 90 seconds later, she came back with, "Here. You okay?" I sent, "Fine. Check these names anywhere you can, including with M.P. Powell. Angel Dahl, possible associate Paulie, both possible ex-military." She sent, "Will do." Then I sent the question that had been on my mind for 5.5 hours. What is Teresa Daniels' real name? There was the usual 90-second delay, and then she came back with Teresa Justice. Chapter 6. No point in going to bed, so I just stood at the window and watched the dawn. It was soon in full flow. The sun came up over the sea. The air was fresh and clear. I could see 50 miles. I watched an Arctic tern coming in low from the north. It skimmed the rocks as it passed them. I guessed it was looking for a place to build a nest. The low sun behind it threw shadows as big as vultures. Then it gave up on the search for shelter and looped and wheeled and swooped away over the water and tumbled into the ocean. It came out a long moment later, and silver droplets of freezing water trailed it back into the sky. It had nothing in its beak, but it flew on like it was happy enough. It was better adapted than me. There wasn't much to see after that. There were a few herring gulls far in the distance. I squinted against the glare and looked for signs of whales or dolphins, and saw nothing. I watched mats of seaweed drift around on circular currents. At 6:15, I heard Duke's footsteps in the corridor and the click of my lock. He didn't come in. He just tramped away again. I turned and faced the door and took a deep breath. Day 13, Thursday. Maybe that was better than day 13 falling on a Friday. I wasn't sure. Whatever. Bring it on. I took another breath and walked out through the door and headed down the stairs. Nothing was the same as the morning before. Duke was fresh, and I was tired. Pauly wasn't around. I went down to the basement gym and found nobody there. Duke didn't stay for breakfast. He disappeared somewhere. Richard Beck came in to eat in the kitchen. There was just him and me at the table. The mechanic wasn't there. The cook stayed busy at the stove. The Irish girl came in and out from the dining room. She was moving fast. There was a buzz in the air. Something was happening.
"Big shipment coming in," Richard Beck said. "It's always like this. Everybody gets excited about the money they're going to make."
"You heading back to school?" I asked him.
"Sunday," he said.
He didn't seem worried about it, but I was. Sunday was 3 days away, my fifth full day there, the final deadline. Whatever was going to happen would have happened by then. The kid was going to be in the crossfire throughout. "You okay with that?" I asked.
"With going back?"
I nodded. "After what happened?"
"We know who did it now," he said. "Some assholes from Connecticut. It won't happen again."
"You can be that sure?" He looked at me like I was nuts.
"My dad handles stuff like this all the time, and if it's not done by Sunday, then I'll just stay here until it is."
"Does your dad run this whole thing by himself, or does he have a partner?"
"He runs it all by himself."
His ambivalence was gone. He looked happy to be home, secure and comfortable, proud of his dad. His world had contracted to a barren half-acre of lonely granite, hemmed in by the restless sea and a high stone wall topped by razor wire.
"I don't think you really killed that cop," he said.